Lynch
on Cork's Good Times.
Red FM.
All right, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Huge thanks to Stevie G in there. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour. There's an interview with Pat Ryan on the way, done by our very own Joe McCarthy. And it was Joe McCarthy out for us in Parky Ring this afternoon in a brilliant day for Cork Camogie. And I got to speak to him about it. All right, we're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by our very own Joe McCarthy out for us, as always, in Parky Ring for one of the most comprehensive victories you will see, Jura. Cork 6-25 to Limerick's 5 points.
Yeah, Dan, the final score is as comprehensive as it suggests. Cork certainly laid down an early marker in search of their third successive O'Duffy Cup. Look, to be fair, Limerick were outclassed. Cork were always expected to win. The winning margin, though, was a bit more than I think a lot of people might have expected. But look, when you've got the likes of Amy O'Connor with 1-7, Clodagh Finn and Orla Cahalani coming up with 2-3, Katrina Mackey with 1-4, and just from start to finish, dominant all over the pitch. It was exactly the start Cork would have wanted ahead of much, much tougher tests in their group, where they'll be going to Tipperary next weekend and the Rag and then Wexford and Clare. But look, as starts go for the reigning All-Ireland champions, it couldn't have gone much better than it did today.
Pretty impressive. If only they were the ones out playing the Limerick hurlers last weekend, we might have done something. I suppose there was a bit of plenty of talk around the Scarts issue today, and I'm sure that came up. We'll have a quick look back at it now, because look, it's kind of done and dusted. But what did Maeve and Jura have to say? I know you're speaking to them after the game about it.
Yeah, I suppose from Jura Manley's point of view, we put the question to him, look, just how disrupted was the whole saga for him and his backroom team? And he was honest, he said it wasn't really. They trained as they normally did. Obviously, there was a lot of chatter about it, but I suppose his message, as it always has been, he was going to back the players no matter what. And if they felt that Scots were just too awkward and that they would prefer to play in shorts, he would back them all the way. That's exactly what he did. But in terms of training, everything went along as it normally did. I suppose the only drawback for Jura was that they lost out in the Munster final the night before they were supposed to play Waterford. And I think he's just a bit, it wasn't upset, but I suppose it was just annoyance more than anything else. And he also made the point as well, and it's a good point, like, where is this going to fit into the calendar? Because for the next 4 or 5 weeks, Cork are booked up with group matches, and after that they'll be straight into the knockout series pretty quickly. So there may not be a room in the calendar for the Munster final, which is a real disappointment considering the way that situation was handled and the way the game was called off so soon before the game. Like, Maeve Cahalan, as the Cork captain, was pretty forthright. This is what the players just felt. You know, we're talking about wearing a pair of shorts. We wear them in training all the time, which is the point that she made. Why shouldn't we be allowed to wear them during matches if we feel more comfortable with them? And today, of the four teams competing, Cork obviously had the Cork seniors wore shorts, as did Limerick. Kilkenny did in the under 23 game, which was the curtain raiser. The Cork under 23s did not, but that's only because they wore skirts, because they just weren't able to get a full set together in time. And that's been an issue around the country over the last 24 hours, Dan, which I didn't realise. That now that it's passed, there's huge demand from all over the country immediately for updated pairs of shorts, and I think the Camogie Association have given county boards time, a couple of weeks if not a bit more, just to get sorted on that. But we will see a mix of skirts and shorts in the future, and that's the way it should be. But from Jura Manley, the manager's point of view, he's just glad that, I suppose, that it's over. Disappointed that they didn't get a chance to play that Munster final though, and they may not get to play it. And Maeve Cahalan's point is, as players, I think she was kind of saying, without saying it, look, I don't know what all the hullabaloo is. We're just looking to play in shorts. We train in them every single day. Now that it's passed, and it's been passed by such a big majority as well, and the backing of the GPA, I think it's a good positive thing. And look, it's good to be back talking about performances and victories rather than about what the players are actually wearing.
Exactly. And who are the people who stood out today, Jar?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's hard to pick out players at the back because they had so little to do. I suppose from a concerning point of view, just in the backs, Laura Tracy did go off at halftime injured, and there's concern there. There's a few players carrying knocks, and that'd be something just to look at, head to Tipperary next weekend and going up to the Rag. But from start to finish, Aisling Thompson in the middle of the park, Dan, she just set the standard. Even when Cork were cantering to victory and after scoring their fourth goal, she was roaring at every single player to get on the ball, keep doing the things they were doing, and not let their standards drop. And on a day now when she could have easily just sat back and, you know, lay back a bit in the defence and just let the game pass her by. She took the game to Limerick, put in some crunching tackles, and once again set the tone in the middle of the field alongside Hannah Looney. Saoirse McCarthy did well in the first half before she was brought off a bit early, but I suppose the forward line, Dan, Clodagh Finn and Orla Cahalan was probably the standout player. She was just sublime from start to finish. She took her two goals brilliantly. It didn't make a mistake all day, but Cahalan, along with Emma Murphy, Amy O'Connor, Clodagh Finn, Katrina Mackey, that whole forward line, they just never let up. They never gave Limerick a moment's rest. And the way they looked to force turnovers, even late in the second half, when you've only restricted your opponent to 5 points, I think it's a real sign, Dan, that Cork are laying down a marker for the rest of the country, that no matter what's put in front of them, they're going to play for the full 60 plus minutes, and they're going to be the team to beat once again this year. Now look, it's hard to tell on such a day like today when a lot of subs came on, when the weather wasn't great, but look, if you put up 625 on any opponent, you're clearly doing the right thing.
It was a good day for Cork Camogie all around, as the under 23s won their game against Kilkenny as well, again fairly comprehensive leisure.
Yeah, and that's a great sign. Danny Morrissey, who'd be the coach, even Germanly oversees the under-23 team. And just for people listening in, this is the first ever under-23 All-Ireland Camogie Championship, and it's to replace the previous intermediate and premier junior inter-county grades that used to go on. Cork were very successful. So for counties like Cork that would have had a second team, they would have been intermediate, or they would have been junior for other counties. That's all gone now. So the gap between minor and senior has been plugged by this new under 23 grade. Cork won the Munster Championship 6 weeks ago, believe it or not, by beating Tipperary after extra time. And today was their first group stage game. They've been drawn in Group A against Kilkenny, who they beat 2-16 to 8 points. They'll play Galway, Tip and Waterford over the coming weeks. And of those five teams, four will then go through to the semi-finals. So there's a good round-robin phase, lots of games to be played. And I suppose from Cork's point of view, Dan, the idea here is it gives players an opportunity to put their hand up for selection, the younger players that mightn't be on the senior panel. And one player certainly did that today, and that was Amy Shepherd. She scored 2-6 and played superbly, 4 from frees, 1 from 45, which was just excellent. And all around the pitch, there was really impressive performances. Millie Condon in midfield, Orla Mullins, Niamh Nakhnavola, who also stood out. And just from Cork's point of view, they weren't up to Kilkenny or no bad team, and they were with them for the majority of the first half, but the way Cork pulled away in the second half, it was fantastic to see some of the Camogie that they played, and they look a real, real threat this year. As I said, there's five teams in the group. A win like today gives you every chance of finishing in the top four and reaching an All-Ireland semi-final. But I suppose the big thing with this grade, picking up players that might make the jump up to senior hopefully at some point. And certainly there was a lot of players put up their hands today, none more so than Amy Shepherd, who scored 2-6 out of that 2-16.
Cork Camogie seems in a good place. I'm not entirely sure the hurling is, but look, it's probably yet to be seen. We'll play out for your interview with Pat Ryan in a small bit. What sense did you get from him, Jar, about the game tomorrow?
Well, I interviewed him immediately after the Limerick game, Dan, and naturally he was very frustrated, and it's the most frustrated I've seen him. But I suppose the key point out of the interview is, look, it was put to bed very quickly and they've had a good week's training. Now the concern is that there's four changes made due to injuries, like to Rob Downey and a couple of other players who've cried off an injury. So the panel is being stretched. There may even be more players between here and tomorrow when they play Waterford that may not start that game. We'll have to wait and see. But I suppose having a short week, then, from Pat Ryan's point of view, was actually a good thing, just to get on with it straight away and, you know, get it out of the system on the Monday night. They were back in the gym. They had a really good session on the Monday night, the players. Everyone was positive coming out of it. All the focus is on this game against Waterford. And as he said many, many times before, if you give me one match like to get out of Munster, whatever about reaching a Munster final, whatever about playing Limerick again, just get out of Munster and get into the All-Ireland Championship. That's what he wanted from the start of the year, because he continually says it's so difficult in Munster, and it really is. But very upbeat, very much looking forward to the game. And I suppose the thing that he keeps reiterating, the players want to put the pride in that Cork jersey. They want to represent it to the best of their ability, and certainly in front of more or less a full house tomorrow. They're going to want to do that. They're going to have to do that against a very agile, a very fit Waterford team that will run them into the ground. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be very, very tough. But I suppose the week that they've had and the week that they've put down, apart from those injuries, it's certainly very positive vibes coming out of the Cork camp heading into that crunch game.
All right, Gerald, hopefully a positive result tomorrow, and well done to Cork Camogie today, and cheers for sending in all the audio. Appreciate it.
No bother, mate. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, sir. Well, we're going to hear some audio now, and Gerald caught up with Maeve Callahan after the game.
Okay, Maeve, comprehensive, convincing, everything you want to say, but look, you had a job to do today and you went and did it.
Yeah, like, we've been playing for this game now since, you know, about 2 weeks ago. You know, we knew it was set one up where we wanted to be in the championship. So job done for us, really.
It's difficult when you're overpowering the opposition, but you have to keep your foot on the gas. Is that something that you've learned over the last couple of years winning All-Ireland, that you just keep going to the end?
Yeah, definitely, and I suppose we have different targets that we go after, you know, setting our own standards. So obviously, you know, at times there the game is a bit one-sided, but you know, you're constantly going against your own standards and trying to hit those targets. So I suppose we'll have to find out the stats after, but hopefully we hit most of them today.
Things are going to get a little tougher, to put it mildly, up to the rag to play Tipperary, never get an easy game there again, but again, this is a good start, I suppose, getting a game under your belts before you go to Tipperary is an advantage.
Yeah, definitely, and I suppose, you know, with the Monty final being called off, we kind of felt that we hadn't played a game in a while, so it was good to get a game under our belt today. Going off to Tipperary now, the next day in the rag will be a different story. You know, they'll be looking for revenge, I suppose, from the league game, so, you know, we'll have to be really at the top for a game for that. It's always tough going off to the rag, so, you know, hopefully we'll have enough fit bodies up there and, you know, be ready to put in a performance.
The Cork saga is behind us. I'm sure you're relieved more than anything else. Can I just ask you, as a Cork captain, just individually as a Cork captain, you're not speaking on behalf of your team now, but as yourself, are you just happy that it's over and done with, or are there still just some real disappointments and losing out in a Munster final the way it happened?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, that was a game that we really prepared for, and something that we really wanted to play. You know, Waterford are there in the top teams, and they're the teams that you want to be playing with. So I suppose leading up to it, it was hugely disappointing that we couldn't play a game that we had prepared so well for, but I suppose, you know, we have to move on with it now, and we're into the All-Ireland series, and you know, the vote was fairly convincing, you know, last Thursday, so we're just happy now to drive on. I'm sure we'll hear what will happen with the Munster final in the coming weeks, but you know, I suppose our focus now was Limerick today, Tipperary the next day, so you know, I suppose that's what we're focusing on now for the next couple of weeks.
And just finally, that's the key thing, we want to be talking about Camogie, we want to be talking about performances, scores, individual performances. This issue has come and gone, but the players standing their ground, and I say the players, the GPA standing their ground, it must give you heart as well in the future. Hopefully there won't be too many more issues, but if there are, that the players are able to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, definitely, and I suppose it is down to the players, and you know, they're the people that you want to be, you know, making the decisions for the game, and you know, I suppose the players playing and what's comfortable for them, and the game has gone to such a high level now that, you know, I suppose what players are looking for isn't too out of the way, and you know, I suppose to tug out in a pair of shorts, something that we train in night in, night out, I don't think was a big ask. So, you know, thankfully the results went the way that I suppose the majority of players in the country wanted it to go. And it was great to see, you know, the majority of players in shorts today, and I'm sure if they wanted to wear a sport, the choice is there. So, you know, I think it's the best decision for everyone.
Well said. Thanks very much. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, great stuff. Maeve and Ger caught up with Ger Manley, the Cork Camogie senior manager.
Okay, Ger, look, comprehensive victory, one-sided. I know you tell me that you always learn something from every match, but today, did you learn much?
Look, I suppose we need to get a few games into Laura Tracy and a few, and Mackie there, the game she didn't play for a long time. Mackie, she's been injured, and I suppose we were a bit rusty, I thought, early on, but look, once we got going, we were quite good. It was tough in Limerick, I suppose, coming down, they've been out of players not unavailable to them, and look, for us, come out and getting ready, really, for next week, you know, and we'll begin next week, no mistake.
Any injuries, a few girls went off there?
Just the hard ground. Ground's going very hard, so we're trying to mind a few. Did a few injuries come in to look, we treat every team we play with respect. So look, I put out my strongest team, and look, there's a few girls now disappointed and get games today, but that's the way we're lucky. I'm trying to make it competitive, and I think we were competitive. You know, we have to get a good squad together. It's just hoping we don't get too many more injuries. If we get injured in the football match, not sure we'll ever back for next week. Hopefully, we'll. And McCartan, as you know, broke her ankle in the league final, played a full match with a broken ankle, which is fair going, but she's a tough nut. Hopefully, we might have her back on the field as well.
I suppose positive scoring conversion, like you didn't take the foot off the gas. That's what you want to see from your team.
Yeah, it is standards. Here, I said it to them at half time, just keep playing on. Like, you mean, we have to, because we're going to have harder battles ahead, and I suppose games like this set you up. I thought we were a bit rusty, I suppose, early on in the game, but once, look, Clinical got some great scores and say we have a very good forward, and I think, but I mean, those days mightn't happen, but the days it does, I think we look very good. And look, the players push themselves, which for me is the big thing. Like, and no matter who we're playing, we treat them all with the same respect, whether it's Limerick, Tipperary, Galway. You have to. If you don't, you won't get the performance, and I thought today we were very good.
Okay, finally, I have to ask you, because I haven't spoken to you since the saga has come and gone, but skirts versus shorts, from a managerial and background point of view, how disruptive was it?
Not really, really trying to wear. Like, we had no issue with it. I suppose the Munster final was a bit disappointing, but I suppose, look, the GPA and they were involved in it, so I suppose, look, and the girls had their views in it, and look, I back the girls when it comes to, like, I mean, I never wore a skirt, so as the girls said, they are awkward, like, and I suppose at times it can be uncompromising, they're falling down, you know.
Yeah.
Shorts, look, they're happy with them, like, they can, like, the interview team, we hadn't shorts to put on, so you have to have a uniform red shirt, so we went with the skirts in the first game. Hopefully we'll have them for next week now for the tip game above, and the girls there had shorts, which we got off the county board earlier in the year for training. So look, it's done and dusted. I think common sense prevailed in the end. Like, the Munster finals, we had to fit it in. It's going very hard to fit it in now, really, but look, we're happy enough with it.
Okay, thanks very much.
All good.
Yeah, great day for Cork Camogie, and hopefully tomorrow will be a great day for Cork Hurling as they take on Waterford in Super Value Parky Keeve from 4. Hopefully a huge response on the back of the Limerick game last weekend. To chat about it, John McCarthy caught up with none other than Bannister Pat Ryan.
Now, the big one on Sunday, the Munster Senior Hurling Clash, Cork versus Waterford at Super Value Parky Keeve with a 4 o'clock throw-in. Huge, huge excitement, massive crowd heading down to Leaside for another big day out in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. And with that in mind, we're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench once again by the Cork Senior Hurling Manager, Pat Ryan. Pat, you're very welcome back to the show. Can I start by asking you to describe how the past week has gone in terms of training and preparation for this game?
Yeah, it's gone very well, Gerald. Look, obviously, look, we have a couple of injuries since the game at the weekend, but look, in fairness, I think, look, fellas dust themselves down well on Monday night. We're back in the gym, and we look, two great training sessions on Tuesday and Thursday, and look, ready to go. Look, obviously, we all know that the performance against Limerick wasn't up to the standard it should be from ourselves, and look, this is a great opportunity to, you know, for a bit of redemption in that side.
Yeah, motivation is never an issue for a Cork senior hurler or for a management team, Pat, from speaking to and seeing the players. But the disappointment, how quickly was that forgotten? Was the first night back really just getting it out of the system and just refocusing straight away?
Yeah, look, that's what it's about, really. Look, you know, look, in fairness, look, we always knew that, look, this was a championship, you know, reckless thing, this is a marathon. And, you know, look, the goal always was to get kind of to 5 and 6 points, and that guarantees you. Well, it guarantees you into the Munster final, it guarantees you into the All-Ireland series. And look, we always knew that it was going to come down to this. Once Waterford had kind of beaten Clare, that there was always going to be a good chance that the last game was going to be a do-or-die effort between the two teams. And, you know, look, it's a great opportunity for ourselves at home. With a looking fantastic, huge Cork crowd are going to follow us again. And look, there's an onus on ourselves, now the players and management, to make sure that we represent the jersey the way we've done over the last couple of years, and to prove that our last performance, you know, was kind of a one-off.
Do you take any of last year's learnings when you beat Limerick in Cork on that fateful night when you were backs against the wall and you had to win that victory? Have you alluded back to that, or is this a brand new championship and a brand new game and you just have to win it?
No, yeah, look, it's a brand new game. Look, obviously, much in humble, we put an awful lot of effort into the year, and, you know, this often happens in Munster Championship where you come down to a situation and you're back into the old thing, the old knockout role, and that often happens for teams in the Munster Championship, even in the group stage. So, look, we're back into the old traditional kind of Munster Championship where there's knockout between two teams, and look, we have a good advantage playing at home, and look, we've had a good record there over the last couple of years, so we need to make sure that we honour that and give us an opportunity to move into the next part of the All-Ireland Championship. Look.
How impressed have you been with Peter Queeley and the job that he's doing and has done at Waterford and bringing them in, you know, in with a shot of their final game of getting to an All-Ireland Championship series?
Yeah, look, it doesn't surprise me. Look, Peter. I heard with Peter and Sars before. He was a coach with our own team in Sars before. Brilliant man, great fellow altogether. And do you know what I mean? Look, he was. I marked him as well, playing for Waterford as well. You know, tough midfielder and played wing back as well, and played in lots of positions. Really, to be honest with you, for Waterford, you know, but really honourable guy that has had huge success across a lot of clubs and stuff like that, and been involved with the county team a good bit. You know, been involved in the back rooms of different teams. So look, and different management teams. So look, great. He's after getting the opportunity, and look, I know what the Waterford are going to come with a huge intensity, huge work rate. They have plenty of really, really good players, and they performed really, really well in the championship, you know, beating Clare. And look, obviously they ran Limerick really, really close, and Tip really, really close the last day. There was nothing in that, with with 6 or 7 minutes to go on Tipperary managed to pull away. So look, from our point of view, look, we just need to concentrate on ourselves, make sure that our performance is really, really good, and you know that we represent the jersey and represent the Cork public the way that they should be represented, and more importantly represent the group ourselves as well, the group of players and the group of management and the backroom team, that we're representing the hopes of Cork people as well as we can, you know.
I know, Pat, from interviewing over the last couple of years, how well you and the backroom team and the players are able to block out a lot of the noise on the outside. When things were going really well last year, we got to the All-Ireland final, came within a whisker of winning it. It dampening down the enthusiasm was half to seem to be the job half the time, and focusing on the job at hand. Have you found the aftermath of Sunday, maybe even on Monday, difficult? Because there was quite a lot of criticism, some of it justified, some of it over the top completely. Or do you just, you and the boys and the management team, do you just ignore all of that and focus on the players? But you must have heard some of the criticism.
Look, to be honest with you, I haven't. Straight up, look, I don't look at social media, don't look at any of that stuff. But look, you're not a fool, that's not. I've seen it happen to other managers and other things. And look, Roping's whole thing, we deserve a lot of criticism the way we, you know, look at just wanting to lose a match and not perform or be a bit unlucky and you don't play up to the standard you should be. You know, look, we're fully aware, the players are fully aware that the effort that was given last Sunday wasn't good enough. It wasn't up to our standard, it wasn't up to what it should be. But look, whether you win, lose or draw, you're going to get criticism from certain angles. And look, if you're in management or you're in the intercounty hurling and you're looking for praise constantly, you're in the wrong game. So look, but you just have to go to represent yourself as best you can. And from our point of view, look, we didn't represent the jersey, and that's what we spoke about consistently. So we want to represent the jersey as best we can, and we didn't do that last week. And what you try and do then is you try and move on, look at the areas that you can work on. And look, it's very simple. Look, you have to earn the right to play hurling, and we didn't earn the right last week with our work rate. So that's our standard bearer on Sundays. There has to be our work rate, and then leave our hurling play away after that, you know.
We spoke at the start of the year, I think it was very early January, February, definitely, about the importance of having the depth of squad for days like this coming up, when you've got a number of injuries. You've got 4 changes to the starting lineup. Newtown Shandrum's Cormac O'Brien comes in for his first championship start. You've obviously no doubt that this guy can do a job for you when you're putting him in such a high profile game. But you know, without sounding cliche-ish, Jor, the importance of the panel is never more obvious than this one. A must-win game, and you've got to get guys to step up who may not have had an opportunity to get the game time.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and this was Cormac. Look, you know, he's getting an opportunity, obviously, and he's played very well in the league for us, and unfortunately picked up an injury prior to the Clare game. Otherwise, probably would have started that day. But look, it's up to fellas themselves to take their chances when they get chances. And you know, in fairness, look, sometimes when you throw fellas in, you know, things happen and things go really, really positive for fellas, and it you know, it opens up a kind of a new avenue of player that you want to be playing, so it makes us stronger. So look, I don't see us weak at all in any way. Obviously, look, Rob being your captain is disappointed that he can't play from that side of it, but look, from our point of view, it's about but the lads stepping up, they've done all the training, they're in really good shape. And look, they're fit. You know, maybe we made maybe one or two mistakes last week ourselves by playing fellas who probably weren't at 100%, had missed a bit of training coming into it. And you know, but look, there's no excuses in that point. Everybody that's gone out is 100% fit and ready to perform.
And just finally, Pat, there's nothing like a game to get a disappointing result out of the system. And like, having come around so quickly, could you have done with another week, or are you just glad that it's here now?
No, look, when you perform so badly as we did last day, and you know, look, in fairness to Limerick, they're the one team that if you're not at it, you're not really up to it from a work rate point of view, they'll punish you. And they've done that to loads of teams over the last couple of years in this really good era for Limerick hurling. But our thing was to get back on the horse straight away, get back into training, get back focused. And you know, look, the same game, look, over the last 3 years, that's what you do in the Munster Championship. You park with the result that you've had, whether it's win, lose or draw, and you prepare for the next team. And look, in fairness, look, we licked the runes obviously Sunday coming home on the bus, and by the time we got to the gym on Monday, look, our focus was totally on Waterford, and look, we know it's a huge game. And same with them, they licked the runes coming home after Tipperary, and their focus totally was on Cork. So look, it'll be a great game on Sunday. We just got hammer and tongs, and you know, look, we want to represent the jersey the way it should be represented, and that's a huge part of Sunday for us.
Excellent stuff. On Sunday at Super Valley Park, Equiva, at a 4 o'clock throw-in, it's Cork versus Waterford in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. From everybody here on the Big Red Bench as ever, Pat Ryan, thank you very much for your time and the very best of luck.
No problem. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, best of luck to Pat Ryan there and the rest of the Cork team. The rest whistle has gone for halftime here on the Big Red Bench. Plenty more to come, including a Waterford preview with Cork hurling legend Pat Mulcahy. Don't go anywhere.
The Big Red Bench
with Erling.
The Big Red Bench.
Cork's
Good times.
Red FM. Welcome back to the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey here with you for the next half hour. And just to update you on the state of play for a few Cork teams today, Cork City Women's team drew 3-3 against Cliftonville today in their All-Ireland Cup clash. And the Cork footballers had their first All-Ireland Championship fixture against Meath up in Navan, where it finished 12-1 in Meath's favour. Huge games now upcoming for Cork in that one. And of course, as we mentioned earlier, Cork Camogie had a 6-25-5 win against Limerick today. Back to business and focusing on the matters at hand, and we're looking ahead to the do-or-die clash between us and Waterford tomorrow in Super Value Parky Keeve at 4. To chat to me about it was Cork hurling legend Pat Mulcahy. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Pat Mulcahy. Pat, it doesn't get any bigger than this. You know, compared to where we were last year, I'd probably take it, but Waterford in the park tomorrow, ever so slightly, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so look, I suppose, Dan, it's going to be an exciting match. It's knockout. It's effectively a Munster semi-final. So whoever wins, you know, has an opportunity to play for the rest of the year. And whoever doesn't, you know, is in trouble. Like, so it's for Cork, it's a Munster semi-final. So it's a great opportunity for them to get back into a Munster final after last week. So it should be a cracking game. Waterford are a fantastic hurling side. Cork have been playing great hurling all year with the exception of last Sunday. So look, really looking forward to it, and it should be a cracking encounter.
The Limerick game last weekend. Look, before we look forward, we must look back. What did you think of it? Where did it go wrong for the Rebels? It just went right nowhere.
Yeah, it's a funny one, I suppose, Dan, because, like, you know, since the Waterford first round last year, Cork have been really consistent. You know, they've been, you know, right throughout the season last year, beating them twice. I know they got beaten by Clare twice, but the performances were really good, like, you know, really good. And right throughout the league this year, they brought it into the league this year, and the performances were consistently good. You know, so I don't think anyone saw this coming, the level of performance, particularly. Now, look, there's lots of stories out there in terms of the bus was late coming from Cork, and there was an accident on the road, and it was late, and maybe that had something to do with it. Just watching the warm-up, they looked off in the warm-up. I think at one stage I counted 6 or 7 passes in a row going astray, and, you know, I was just watching both warm-ups, and Cork were just off. You know, you could see it. You know, they just didn't have that kind of cohesiveness that you'd expect to see at that point. And sometimes, look, sometimes you can read too much into warm-ups, but they just looked off it. And, you know, even from the throwing, I think Tim won a great ball, and Shane Barrett had a simple chance of a point and went wide. And it almost set the tone for the rest of the match that anything that could go wrong did go wrong. You know, like, even like Darragh was given, no matter what performance Cork puts in, you expect Darragh to pick over a few points. I think he 3 wides that day, last Sunday, and didn't score. And, you know, it just, they were just off. Whatever happened, I can't put my finger on it because no one saw it coming. But and that's notwithstanding, Limerick were absolutely outstanding, you know, played to the peak of their powers and all that goes with that. But just the Cork performance was definitely nothing what we've seen over the last 12 months. So I think you'll know after 5 minutes on Sunday as to what how to frame last Sunday. But we won't know until we see the first 5-10 minutes of the Waterford match.
If you're Pat Ryan walking into the dressing room after a game like that, what are you saying?
Yes, it's a tough one, right? It's a really tough one, but he'll have the time to think about it the last 10, 15 minutes of the match because the match is gone at that stage. But look, Pat's a very personal person and huge motivational coach. And I think for Cork, it's about framing, you know, the 4 or 5 games in Munster Championship. You're always going to have one game that you're going to be challenged with, and just putting it to one side for the week, and making sure that whatever happens, that they bounce back this week. You know, they can take a break after this week and take a breath, as long as they get a result on Sunday and see where they're at and try and figure it out. But for them, it's almost just putting it to bed, framing it in a certain format. You know, Limerick are excellent. Cork aren't as bad as they played. Limerick aren't maybe as good as how they performed either, right? But and looking forward to Waterford and making sure that he gets, you know, an 8 or 9 or 10 performance for the Waterford match, because that's all that matters at this stage in the season, you know?
So you're not hitting the mental the mental panic button just yet?
No, I don't think so. I think, look, you know, over the last maybe 5 or 7 years, there's times in Cork you'd say are very inconsistent. They can be excellent one day and maybe off it the next day. But to be fair, this group of lads over the last year, like, they've been very consistent, you know, in terms of their performances, and they've been exciting, and, you know, they've got great crowds in the league because they've been performing in league matches, you know, and they've been really, really good. So again, there's nothing there over the last 12 to 15 months to say this was coming, right? There was nothing. You know, fellas can point to maybe the pressure was maybe got them a little bit because of, you know, like Paddy Power paying out and all that kind of stuff. But players a bit kind of, you know, distance themselves from that, and they know, like, the challenge. They knew the challenge going to Waterford last week, or going to Clare or Limerick last week. So I don't think that was a reason. Like, it's hard to figure out, but I think they're mature enough to frame it and put it to one side and look forward to Sunday.
We are here. The do or die clash is upon us. What way do you see it going? And I mean, I know there's a few injuries. How do you think they'll affect the squad as well?
Well, I think as my own club man, Cormac Ryan, I think that's actually a positive that he's back in the team. I think he's a defender's defender. I think that he's very unlucky he got injured before the first round. I think he's a shoo-in to play. He's had an excellent league campaign. He's a defender. Nowadays, you know, your half-backs, given the pace and the size of your wing forwards, you have to be an out-and-out defender first and foremost. I think Cork missed that last week against Limerick. I thought he came on, apart from one ball against Hagerty, he did extremely well. I think that's actually a plus to have him in there. Rob Downey's obviously going to be a big loss at centre-back. He's a real talisman for them. So I think he's definitely a big loss. Depends on how Joyce has been doing. He hasn't been, you know, outstanding this year. Probably hasn't kicked on from the ability he's had the last couple of years, but he's still a phenomenal player and a phenomenal defender. He'll be fine. So I don't think, like Niall O'Leary, in terms of performance in the league, is definitely a loss. But Jeremy Millerick's been playing very well in the league and, you know, has been some big performances, unfortunate injuries. So Cormac and Jeremy Millerick coming in, I don't think it dilutes the backline in any way, shape or form. I wouldn't be worried too much about it. Brian Roach is obviously, things have been impressive in training. I Eden Toomey has had, you know, probably hasn't been his best the last two games, but he's still a very good player. But, you know, that's freshening things up in midfield. I think it's a positive that Harney's in the forward line. So I don't think it's especially weakened. I think Rob Downey's kind of leadership might be lacking a little bit. But other than that, I think they'll be fine, you know.
Cormac's first start in championship, isn't it? How do you think he'll fare at halfback?
I think he'll be fine. I think he's a phenomenal. He's a defender's defender, as I said earlier, Dan. He's the guy, like, that does the unseen stuff. He's a fella that if you're playing with him, you really appreciate him. You mightn't see it in the crowd or a supporter or whatever, but he's the fella that you just appreciate because he tracks the runner at the right time. He gets the hooks of blocks in. He closes down the space. So, you know, it's a great day for him. It's a big day for him. He's waited a while for it. He's been on the panel 4 or 5 years. But, you know, to my mind, he has it all. He's big, strong, physical, disciplined, buckets of hurling. You know, so, like, you know, there's certainly no weakness in the Cork defence because he's playing, you know.
Great to see Seamus Harnedy get back into the starting lineup as well. He was one of the few shining lights against Limerick. He was really fighting for his jersey when he came on.
He was, and I don't know what happened there. Like he looked a bit undercooked against Clare in the first round, but he got through it. And he looked back to his best against Tip. He looked really good. So I don't know if he's carrying an injury coming into the Limerick match. That's why he started or not. But I think Cork probably missed him, Dan, because his runs for the puck outs are excellent. I think he makes Pat Collins' puck outs work, especially the ones long. He makes great runs in behind the opposing half back line. For the puck outs that Pat Collins hits short to 21 and then receives it back and striking in 21, ball hits the opposing 21. His runs are late, that he delays his run. He times it really well and he's exceptional in that area. I think Cork missed that the last day. Especially when Decky Dalton went off, the balance of the half hour line just seemed to be a bit off. But I think the way he walks, he's really smart with the likes of Dara Fitz. I think Dara Fitz plays better with Seamus Harnedy in half hour line. That's how I'd put it. So I think it's a big plus to have him back in half hour line for his leadership and for the puck out options.
Yeah, the puck out seems to be a huge problem. We've struggled with down the ears. We thought, I think we remedied it in the semi final and final, but it's just went astray against Limerick. Is that going to be a worry now again on tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a concern. It's a big concern because one of Pat Collins' biggest weapons is, you know, going for distance straight down the middle and coming off the breaks. You know, he's very effective there. So he's going to be a big challenge there for him. I think against Limerick, their best structured, best organised team you're going to have. You're going to meet. They play zonal, and if you get the ball, if you get it wrong, you're in trouble. But De Bourcq will sit deep tomorrow, so he needs to be careful about playing those long balls down to the edge of the D, the opposing D. So he just needs a bit more variety maybe in his game a little bit. But yeah, it's a big game for him tomorrow to bounce back after the Limerick match.
talking about Cork, what do you make of this Waterford side? What do you think they'll bring to the table?
Well, they'll bring savage desire, passion, hunger, and a little flair, right? I think for Waterford, it's a win-win for them. They, you know, given where they've been the last couple of years, and I don't think they've had too many influx of young players. Their underage structures haven't been great the last couple of years. They failed to get out of Munster at minor and 21. You know, for you know, a good number of years, so they haven't had too many young players to panel bar, one or two here and there. So you know, you wouldn't expect them maybe to come out of Munster this year, but they'll be delighted going into the last game that they have an opportunity and a chance to, and that's where they're dangerous. That's where they're dangerous. There's no pressure on them. They're going to go down, and you'll be absolutely sure that you're going to get a 9 out of 10 performance from Waterford tomorrow. Absolutely sure they're going to give absolutely everything. So Cork are going to be ready for that, and they're going to have to be ready for the fight. And if Cork are off, Waterford can take them. Because Waterford absolutely, the hurlers could take them. They're going to have the fight, the passion. I think if they match up, Cork would have to be favourites playing at home. But Waterford are going to bring everything to this tomorrow. They're going to be well organised, well set up, and extremely difficult to beat.
Yeah, there's nothing they'd love more down in Waterford than to knock their big brother out of championship. And they have a scary bench as well. I mean, Desi maybe hasn't been playing great this year, but he can come in off the bench as well as Ozzy Gleeson. Like, they certainly have threats all over the pitch, to be fair.
They have. That's a surprise. Daisy not starting. A big surprise. Now, you know, again, we don't know. Maybe he's carrying an injury or a knock, or hasn't trained properly because of a knock or whatever over the last couple of weeks. Those kind of things are kind of kept very in-house nowadays, you know, so it's impossible to know what's going on there. But, you know, at his best, like, he's a class act, like, isn't he? He's just a class act. So, you know, he's a threat coming in there after 50 minutes. That's going to be a big challenge. But look, Waterford, like, for it's Barron or whoever's playing centre forward or out in the middle of the pitch, they're the same group players the last couple of years. You know exactly what you're going to get off them, right? You know exactly how they're going to play. There's going to be nothing new there. But it's can Cork match that intensity and that passion and that drive the Waterford bring? If they do, I think they'll probably edge it. But if they don't, they're in for an uncomfortable afternoon.
What do you think the key matchups around the field are going to be?
Oh, it's a good question. It's difficult. It'll be interesting to see how Cork set up. You know, where they're going to, like, position with Downey or just in the back. Are they going to leave Joyce sit back? Are they going to go man-to-man across their half-back line? Waterford obviously going to drag a few players back to pitch. Who's going to pick up, you know, the brothers in the forward line? Who's going to pick those lads up? You know, like, it's who's going to pick up Barron? Barron's not going to stay in the forward. He's going to go way out the pitch. Who's going to pick him up? Is Joyce going to track him? You know, so there's lots of matchups there. Joyce and Barron is probably a big one for me. Centre back, centre forward. De Bourke is going to sit in the pocket. What's going to happen there with Darragh Fitzgibbon? Who's going to pick up Darragh Fitzgibbon if he drifts out towards the middle of the pitch? That's a big challenge for De Bourke. So I suppose, to my mind, both centre backs and forwards, they're probably the two key parts of the match that whoever comes out there on top, I think she will have a big bearing in the game.
On the Darragh Fitz one, he probably had as poor performance we've ever seen in a Cork jersey against Limerick. Should he be put in the midfield? Would you leave him in centre forward as numbered?
Yeah, like, I always think he's better centre field because I think he needs a bit of momentum to get going, and running from deep, he's unbeatable. But to be fair to him, he's been very good at centre forward. But I think who plays left to right of him has a bigger bearing whether you play him centre forward or not. So if he is Harnedy back there, I think that's a big plus for him. I think he needs players like that around him to get onto breaks. So fellas that can win ball or go up and contest ball, he's very good coming onto breaks, turning face and goal, or taking passes or whatever. But I think he needs players like that left to right of him, whether it's Dalton or Harnedy. So Harnedy back tomorrow will be a big plus. I wouldn't press the panic button there. I think they do that and they bring back into midfield, then you put Barrett back in centre forward, and then you're looking for a new half forward. So to my mind, they have to trust what they were doing throughout the league. It worked really well for them. It worked quite well, to be fair, in the first 2 rounds of the championship. I'm glad that they haven't made that change. I hope they don't when the game starts tomorrow. I'd give her a game or two at centre forward, because when he's at his best there, he's an unbelievable threat. He's the best athlete Cork have produced in the last 15 years. He's just phenomenal. He's a massive engine. His pace, he's a fabulous striker. He's a real threat as centre forward. It's just to get him into the game and get that balance right around him.
Where's it going to be won and lost? I mean, we saw a severe lack of goal threat against Limerick that we had in the other games. Do you think that could be huge, getting a few goals? I mean, this Waterford team don't tend to score them, but they don't really concede them too much either, to be fair to them.
They don't, I suppose, and isn't that the big question? What are Waterford going to do with De Bourke? Like, you know, the first 2 rounds of the championship, Waterford like let the workers sit and they conceded the middle of the pitch, you know, and then they're quite happy to do that. What are they going to do tomorrow? Are they going to do the same tomorrow? Are they going to just double up and just give them the middle of the pitch and leave the workers sit back? So, like, to be honest, against Limerick, we really struggled midfield and half forward against Limerick, and when you're struggling there, you're delivering to your full forward, and it's not going to be what it should be. To be honest, like, even the first 20 minutes of the Limerick match, like, Cork had opportunities. They had a couple of opportunities. Connolly was through and he was fouled. Burns was booked for it. One ball just didn't go to hand between Hayes and Connolly, and they were in. If they did, Limerick's full back line, as well and all as they played, you know, their pace is still a question mark inside. I thought Cork had the measure, but they just didn't get the ball in. Cork was striking ball in from deep in their own half back line against the breeze, and they were just struggling a little bit there. I think it'll be different tomorrow if they can work the ball out to 65. And if they can deliver that ball into Hayes, Connolly and Horgan, I still think they're enough of a threat to get goals. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a matchup Waterford do in the full back line, who Prunty picks up, when he picks up Hayes or not, or goes on Horgan. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. So I still think Cork have a major goal threat. They just need to win the mid-late battle. They need to win their half back line. They need to win midfield to give them a platform to get that good ball into the full forward line, you know.
Lastly, and maybe always the most awkward one, you kind of alluded to it already, to be fair. What's your prediction for the match tomorrow?
I think we'll know after 5 minutes where Cork are at the right tempo of the match, and I think if Cork at the right tempo, I think Cork by 5 or 6 points. If they're not, it'll come down to a dogfight, and I'd be worried that Waterford could scrape it. But to my mind, if Cork are at the pitch of the game after 5 minutes, I think Cork will win it and win it reasonably well.
I hope you're right, Pat, thanks so much for joining us here on the Big Red Bench, and hopefully we'll be celebrating the Cork win tomorrow, and we're still in it.
Exactly. Cheers, Dan. Thanks very much. Sound.
Yeah, huge thanks to Cork hurling legend Pat Mulcahy for his time earlier today. Now, we have a very special piece of audio, if I do say so myself. Earlier in the week, I got to catch up with world record-breaking powerlifter Liam Bevel, where he recalled the inspirational story of how being hit by a car turned him into a professional weightlifter. Enjoy.
No, lads, I have a tendency to go on because I think I kissed the Blarney Stone a couple of years ago and I could have swallowed a little bit. So if this is getting too much, you know, you just say, cut. My name is Liam Bevel. I'm the Guinness World Record holder in deadlift. Sly!
60 years old and still powerlifting.
Still
what's been the secret to your longevity?
Well, not believing I'm 60. I actually just, see, you can hear the laugh already from my training partner over there, Niall Redden. Training with him, Niall is 30 years of age, 32. Trying to keep up with him. It's a full-time job. So, you know, if I was to sit down and say, well, you know, 60 years of age, I'm not going to be able to do that. Well, then I'm not going to be able to do it. So I try and keep up with him, but I don't feel my age. I don't feel 60. And sometimes after I wake up and I'd say, you know, if I'm doing a little bit of a shave in the mirror, I might say to myself, who's that great looking kid? Looking kid. Who's that good looking man? Looking out of me. The opposite to that, I'd say, you know.
Do you have any plans to ever retire, or are you just going to keep going?
No, like I said, I gave it up for 14 years. And the worst thing I ever did was give it up because I suddenly felt old.
How did you first start off lifting weights? What got you into the inner youth?
It was the summer of 1983. It was the 3rd of June, 1983. The date is etched in my memory because my life now consists of pre 3rd of June, 1983 and post 3rd of June, 1983. That's my split point. You know, I went out. So it was a great night walking home with a friend of mine. Brian Healy was his name. All of a sudden you'd hear the engine roar of a car. At a split second, we just saw the car. It veered towards us. And I pushed Brian out of the way. And in the process of pushing Brian out of the way, I tried to jump out of the way myself in the opposite direction. And I was too late because it was estimated that it was going about 60 miles an hour. But having said that, when it did hit me, my legs weren't on the ground. I was in the process of diving, and they reckon that's what saved my life, because had it been planted there, I would have been dead at 60 miles an hour, the car would have killed me. But instead, it just hit full force into the legs, twisted me, somersaulted about 20 metres, landed on the side verge of the path, and my legs were hanging over the curb, and the pain, I'll never forget the pain, it was indescribable. But you see that because of my leg, the bones were coming out through the right leg. And my foot was down here and the rest of my body was up here, so there was a difference, and it was pulling down, and it was agony. It was pure agony, and I was looking at all these jagged bones sticking out, and the leg muscle, the calf muscle, was barely attached. It was barely holding my leg on. It was twisted badly, and this one now was twisted at a bad angle as well, but it looked horrible on the right foot. And another friend of mine then had seen this and came over and held my legs up, which relieved the pain a bit, because gravity was killing me. And even when the ambulance came and they're feeding you nitrous oxide and oxygen, and they put inflatable casts on the leg, and even that was just agony. I was going in and out of consciousness, and I even remember at the time, because I thought they were amputating my leg. Whatever, you know, what all was coming into my head, they're going to take the leg. So I caught him by the collar, and he said, "Don't take my leg, don't take my leg," you know. And I'm embarrassed about it years later, but it's the truth. Yeah. And because when I had hit the ground, I presume that there was blood coming from my ear, so I presume that the ambulance guys thought that I had brain damage, because I had hit the ground so hard and the blood was streaming from my ear. My wife says to this day that I did have brain damage, but that's a different story. It's very uncomfortable.
Were the lads ever caught?
Oh, they were caught. They were caught. It turned out that his father was a mechanic, and he stole the car from his father's garage. And obviously, no tax, no insurance, and they got a suspended sentence. Is the best that they got, you know. The thing about that is that I try not to think of that, and I never really mention it, like, to people, you know. And the lads over in the corner now are hearing the story as well for the first time. So you're privileged. To survive, I had to go into the gym. To learn how to walk, I went into the gym. I was very capable on my crutches, you know. I could go down the stairs and come up the stairs without ever putting my foot on it, you know, just using the crutches. So that's because I developed an upper body strength. And I said, I'll keep this going. I'll go into the gym and I'll keep this going, because I liked the feeling. It didn't compensate for my athleticism when I was growing up, but it was something, because I was in severe depression after getting hit by the car, you know, and laid up in hospital. But I saw this guy when I went in, and I was just trying, because I wasn't a strong guy, I was a weak guy, I have small bones, you know, I have small structure, I should say. And I saw this guy named Jimmy Butler. He later became a European champion bodybuilder. But he just picked up the biggest dumbbells that were inside in the place, and he just started pressing them. And I said, this is an impossible task. There's no way I could be seeing this. And then by the time he was finished, I said, well, I want a bit of that. I'm going to do that. So that's what got me into the gym, and that's what kept me going. I don't hold any animosity against anyone. I don't have any hatred or bitterness, because, to be quite honest with you, this is what I said. My life post-1983 has been better. It really hurt. It really hurt. I was in a bad state of depression, but, you know, I said I could keep going feeling sorry for myself, or I could not look back anymore, because what's the point in looking back? You know, I'm not going that worse. So I just made the conscious decision to keep going forward, and I don't look back anymore. You know, it is what it is. It's my favorite saying, because I can't do anything about it. And if I can't do anything about it, why let it bother you? It has never stopped me. I've never competed in a disabled competition. Everything I've done is an able competition. So that 285 Guinness World Record was actually done in a competition under strict powerlifting rules, which also made me ranked number one in the world. I'm too able-bodied for a disability competition. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually too disabled for an able body competition. So I don't know. There's a separate category there for me. It's usually the mental category. I don't know.
What a story. And there'll be plenty more coming up on the sportsshow.ie pages over the next while. And just the flavour of what we'll be posting from that interview. So football now. When earlier in studio, I was only delighted to be joined by football social media personality Jamie Lomax to talk about his 1-807 football series and upcoming Cork City documentary. We're delighted to be joined here in the Big Red Bench studio by Jamie Lomax, a man who's taken football social media by storm, which are 1-807 football series. Now, people may be wondering what that's all about. Jamie, can you please tell us?
Thank you very much, Dan. So, 2 years ago, I came up with the crazy concept to watch every First Division team in Europe and also the EFL 72. So, the EFL 72 is the Championship, League 1 and League 2, which inspired me to create the whole concept of watching every First Division team, because there's a football challenge called EFL 92 in England, where you watch the Premier League, Championship, League 1 and League 2. And I wanted to create something much bigger and much more memorable, so I decided, why not watch every First Division team in Europe? I posted a little video on TikTok, and to my surprise, it blew up straight away. And since then, I've been travelling all across Europe trying to complete this challenge.
Wow, how many teams have you ticked off so far?
It's 125, so I'm 15% of the way.
Wow, a lot of money. You're travelling around Europe. Where's the most exotic place you travel to?
I would say the Faroe Islands.
Wow.
It took me 4 days to get there, and I spent 30 hours on a ferry and travelled across four different countries.
Was it worth it?
Yeah. Oh, incredible.
Yeah?
I got picked up by a random stranger off the boat, took me to the match. I was filming in the pouring rain, torrential rain. You were up in the clouds watching the football match. It was just surreal. It makes 4 days of travel seem like nothing.
That's like us going to Cove Ramblers for a match sometimes. Look, you've done Cork City. You've done your 1-807 on Cork City. We'll get into a bit of reason why you're back again. But how was that original experience like for you? What game were you there to see?
So the first game I ever went to was Cork City versus Galway United.
This is the one that blew up originally, was it?
No. So this is my first ever experience at Turner's Cross. So as you know, if you're from Cork, a man named Brian Lennox, who was one of the founding investors of Cork City. I used to study at UCC, I did business and French degree, and I was training with the J1s at the time in my final year. And Brian Lennox took an interest in the training sessions and some of the matches, and he also took an interest in me. And he asked me one training session in Bishopstown right here, what I wanted to do after college. And I said social media, graphic design, something like that, but I wanted to work in football, because just insanely passionate and devoted to football. It's been my whole life. He decided that, why not come to Turner's Cross? Why not come to the Gantry? I'll put you in contact with Aaron Howie. You can go to a few games, see what it's like to work in media, see if you like it, build your CV, work experience. No problem. First game I went up to the Gantry. I've never experienced anything like it before. It was, I would say, it was a record attendance at the time for quite a while. I think it was about 5,500 fans at Turner's Cross. Absolutely packed in the shed in across the stands. I think Roy Keane even made an appearance somewhere in the stands. And I was just blown away, because I'd never experienced... It was my first football match in Ireland that I'd watched. And I moved from England when I was 3 years old. But growing up loving football, I never really knew what the League of Ireland was, what the Premier Division was. Even though for someone as obsessed with me as football, I never took an interest in local football, because where I'm from, I live in Tipperary on the border of Kilkenny. There's no local team. There's no reason to get involved other than to play football yourself and then to watch your favourite team from England. And I just got hooked from it. I got hooked from it from that night. It was a 1-0 loss to Galway, but I was just hooked by the atmosphere and kind of opened up my eyes to what's actually possible in this country.
Yeah, what did you make about the shed end?
Oh, brilliant.
You've had a few experiences of it now at this stage, have you?
I've had a few experiences. So I've watched it from afar, and I've also been a part of it. So for the series, I came back for the game in, I think it was May 26, 2023, against Shamrock Rovers. And it was quite an infamous game, because there was 3 red cards for Shamrock Rovers. Cork were desperate. Cork couldn't score a goal to save their life.
That's us now.
And I went everywhere. I wanted to fully experience Turner's Cross. I went up into the gantry. I went to the far stand beside the away fans. Mm-hmm. I went into the main stand just below the gantry. Then I went into the shed end, and I loved it in the shed end. It was just immense. The atmosphere was brilliant for a team that was struggling at the time. And also the circumstances of, you're playing against 8 men and you can't score, and you're still backing your team, you're still anxious, you're still on top of the players to get that result. And eventually I went into the corner, and when that goal went in by Rory Keane, I think it was 85th minute, just absolute euphoria.
You got that on camera as well,
did you? On camera, yeah. And you had, I remember a clip, I had this old man in front of me, he takes off his yellow t-shirt, he's swinging it around. they crashed the advertising boards, they all jumped on top of each other. It was
he wasn't an old man, just the stress of following Cork City just made him look 20 years older than he actually was, I'd say. So you've seen Cork City play 3 times, Galway United, Shamrock, and then UCD as well when we got promotion as well. But you were back, you're back here in Cork, obviously, you're here with me now. What's the purpose of your visit this time?
So over the last 2 years, I've been constantly travelling, filming, working, trying to create this. Well, I've turned it into a documentary now. Before, it was just a football series. I tell football clubs, but now I've told people it's a documentary. It sounds a lot more official when I approach clubs for media accreditation, but I'm trying to turn the short form content that's elevated the success I've had so far initially and turn it into a long form content like a YouTube series that will hopefully, it's by far by definition the world's biggest football series, but to make it the world's best football series is the aim. So I've come back down to Cork this weekend. I filmed an interview with Brian Lennox, the reason why I started this whole series, why I got into football, and I've done a few interviews with some fans that went to the Galway match last night. It'd be interesting to hear the perspective on it from last night.
A lot of people listening might not know Brian, of course, he's of the chip shop fame. How's retirement treating him?
Oh, he's loving it. He said to me, I'm not completely stress free, but I'm pretty much stress free.
And you were telling us a good Roy Keane story off air, you know, you able to say that one again?
Yeah. So the reason why I came back down to Cork this week, I'd already filmed a lot beforehand. I've got a lot of footage. I was doing my research on Brian Lennox and an article popped up on the Irish Examiner and it mentioned Roy Donovan. And so Roy Donovan at the time was sold for a record fee. It was 700,000, I think it's euros. I don't know if it was in pounds or in euros. 700,000, I think it was 400,000 initial fee and then 300,000 in bonuses, which is a record fee at the time for League of Ireland player. I think it was, I want to say 2007 or 2008. So at the time, it was huge money for an Irish player. But Cork City were playing against Sunderland in a pre-season friendly. And the manager at the time was Roy Keane for Sunderland. And what Brian Lennox told me was, Roy Keane went to Roy Donovan's house for a cup of tea after the match. He tapped him up, trying to get him to come to Sunderland instead of Fulham for cheaper, for the attraction of playing for Roy Keane because he's Irish in the connection.
So the car connection there.
So a transfer fee that was supposed to be originally 1.6 million went down to 700,000 because of Roy Keane.
Fair play to him, the shrewd man that he is. Listen, what do you hope to get out of the series now? When can we expect it to drop? Is it on YouTube, TikTok? Where is it going to be?
YouTube. Just Jamie Lomax 11 and you'll find something. And so aiming to have it up by next week, and I think the aim of the series is to not only document what it's the history of the football clubs, because anyone, any historian can go to a football club and tell you the facts and read it off the internet what it's like, but I also want to tell my personal story of why Cork, the city and the football club, was so instrumental in terms of my life living here when I moved from 17 years of age to go down to Cork City, stayed in Mardyke Hall, spent 3 years here, got my university degree, and then came back to Cork and then started filming this football series. And I think that's the unique aspect. It's more off the ball than on the ball, is what I'd like to say. It's gathering the perspective of football outside of football.
And as well, you'll have your normal TikTok and your Instagram series. Where can people find those as well?
Jamie Lomax, Europe 1207. You search something, you'll see my smile. You'll see my smiley head pop up somewhere.
You do have a smiley head, I'll give you that. It's not a lie, folks. Jamie, thanks so much, and well, hopefully I'll have a smiley head when Cork City get out of this relegation battle. But luckily, yet to be seen. Jamie, appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Dan.
Legend. That's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey signing off, but fear not, Marty Guilfoyle is on the way next. Up the Rebels tomorrow.